Hello. Today I'm going to give a short introduction on secure boot on ARM systems and how you can protect your embedded devices. So, who am I? My name is Alexandre, but you can call me Alex at shorter. I'm a software engineer at SUSE. I currently work on the container ecosystem. And previously, I worked in the automotive team where I played a bit with secure boot on ARM. And the OpenSUSE side, I'm a package maintainer. I'm a community moderator for Portuguese language in the forum and in some channels, not all channels. And I'm also a mirror administrator. I run a mirror in Brazil, but I also help with mirror infrastructure in South America. So the agenda. The idea is to talk about what, why, and how you would use secure boot, and discuss a bit about UEFI secure boot and the ARM Trusted Firmware Trusted Board Boot, or TBB. So what is secure boot? I believe most or everyone should be aware of what it is, because it's a currently UEFI standard. You basically can disable, but it's basically on by default, and our images support secure boot. So secure boot is a way to ensure that images come from a trusted source, so that the images have not been tampered with, and this way you can ensure that you're booting what is supposed to be booted. And each component of the boot process is digitally signed. So the bootloader and potentially other things around modules, drivers could also be. And in some documentations you find the term secure boot, but you can also find trusted boot or chain of trust. But in theory, it usually means the same thing. It's a way to sort of lock down and only allow what you intended to boot on that machine. And why we need it? The main reason is security. So we are building a verified and trusted image. So let's say no hacker has tampered, or issues that could potentially, if you're working in IoT, you want to be sure that the appliance that you have, it could be a TV, it could be a refrigerator, washing machine, whatever, or a server that is running a cell tower. So you want to ensure that you're booting what you're supposed to be booting. It could also be for compliance. In some markets, maybe you are required to. This is something that maybe the cyber resilience IT in EU could potentially bring in, that you need to kind of trust what you're putting on the device. And thank you. And how it works, as mentioned, the images are signed. Firmware bootloaders potentially can have the kernel signed if you want, and other things. And each image is, the signature is verified before execution. So this is done by, let's say, the motherboard or the SoC bootroom firmware. And the keys for validation are used to store safely somewhere in hardware. In certain platforms, it could be on the SoC, like using eFuses, or on general PC or UEFI is usually on the non-volatile RAM that is available for UEFI. And the process varies according architectures and manufacturers. So UEFI is a standard, so who is using that? That is a standard. There is also the ARM, TBBR is another standard, so who is using that is actually, so there are these two standards, but it could potentially vary a few bits here and there, how you flash the board, how you use, enable, and possibly deploy an image. So as mentioned, on x86 and on usually ARM servers for data centers, we have UEFI, and on IoT or embedded appliances, so the smaller boards, we usually have a trusted firmware, a trusted boot. So a bit about UEFI Secure Boot. This is a standard, is a verification mechanism from UEFI, and each program that is loaded by UEFI is validated, verified, and trusted. If it fails to verify, the boot is aborted. So the boot sequence is canceled, is aborted. You get some error message, message with Vari. And in the case of most Linux distributions, we have the Sheen, that is an UEFI application, is a first stage bootloader, and this is going to be signed by Microsoft, because most PC vendors come with Microsoft keys and to verify Windows. So Microsoft signs the Sheen for many distributions. You can submit your own. You need to create a request, and not entirely sure what is the process, but you can do, if you're creating your own distribution, you could potentially do that. And then Sheen is responsible to load and verify CRUD with, let's say, OpenSUSE keys. So the Sheen contains our keys, and the Sheen is signed with Microsoft keys. This way, we can build different images and not have Microsoft to sign every single time. So as long as we don't change the Sheen or we don't change the keys that are used to sign CRUD and everything else. So the boot sequence is fairly straightforward. You have the UEFI firmware, it goes to Sheen, so UEFI validates Sheen, Sheen validates GLUB, and potentially GLUB could validate the kernel. So if you're working in an IoT environment, or if you control the hardware that you're deploying to, in theory or in practice, you can remove Sheen, because if you control the hardware that you're deploying to, so an embedded device, you can embed your keys in the hardware, so it doesn't need to be Microsoft keys. So in this case, you could remove Sheen, and potentially you could even remove GLUB if you know what you're doing. You can boot straight into the kernel, because the kernel is a UEFI stub. So, but the Sheen also allows users to manage their own keys. So there is the mock database. You can add and remove keys from it, and this separates the distribution key that is used to sign GRUB. You can also have your own keys for modules that maybe you build locally and things like that. And ARM Trusted Firmware, or Trusted Firmware A, Trusted Boot, Trusted Port Boot, it's based on the TBBR document or specification that is defining the ARM 10.0.6D. And this establishes a chain of trust. It's pretty similar to, like, it's a similar concept to the UEFI Secure Boot, but a different implementation. So each component trusts the next. So each component of the boot is going to trust the next. And the process varies also by platforms and manufacturers. So depending on the vendor that you're using, you need to go to their documentation. In some cases, you might need to sign an NDA or not, because in some cases, documentation might not be publicly available, because it includes some architectural designs that maybe they don't want to share under like, public. So, and for chain of trust, you require the BL1 or the boot room to believe in the ROM. You need your self-signed certificate to sign. And you need sign all sorts of firmware images. So it depends on the platform, you need to sign different things. And you need a way to provision your keys in the hardware. So it usually means a way to burn the keys, so write the keys into the SoC or someplace in the hardware, to lock those keys, so those keys cannot be replaced. Certain platforms allow you to revoke, so you can have revocation keys as well, so you could revoke the keys if needed, because the keys have been tampered or leaked or something, so you can revoke that device. And also you need a way to enable secure boot. So usually once you burn the keys, or a step before burning the keys, you actually need to set the board into secure boot mode, and that would mean that the board, sometimes it has two modes for secure boot. The secure boot for development, so you can burn multiple keys multiple times. Or you have the secure boot for production, burn once, lock it, ready to deploy. No one can change a key, but you can revoke if needed in some platforms. And the boot sequence for TFA, it's relatively similar. So we have the chain of trust, that BL1 or the trust room, actually trust the BL2, that is the initial bootloader. And then BL2 actually trust BL31, 32, and 33. So this is like 32 is OPT, a secure payload, or could be a different secure payload, but it's optional in most platforms. And then you would also have, until U-boot, you have everything signed. And then U-boot could trust the kernel if U-boot has the keys and the kernel is signed. So if one of these processes, one of these validation fails in this process, the system will panic, will halt, and will stop in a similar behavior as UEFI. So the concept is the same, but the implementation varies. And as I mentioned, varies by architecture, vendor, board, even boards in the same vendor, they vary. Different implementations or different ways to implement. So where is this supported? Where you can use secure boot? So platforms compliant with ARM system ready, they support a UEFI secure boot. So that's standard PC way of booting. So you have your Ampere's, NVIDIA, NXP, Xilinx, and many other platforms. You can check usually with your vendor or on the ARM system ready website. You can check which platforms or which vendors are working with them and which are supported. On NXP, IMX 6 to 9, you have the high assurance boot. It's the NXP ARM implementation. On the Layerscape, you have the QRQ trusted architecture. It's a similar implementation to the IMX platforms, but it varies a bit, but it's similar. You can have Magnavara, STM32, and many more. So you really need to, if you intend to build a device to deploy, you should check with your vendor or with the vendor documentation if they support in one way or another some kind of secure boot. So it's not all platforms from the vendor support, so sometimes you need to talk to them to actually see how you can support. So, what about creating an image? Let's think about like in the OpenSUSE tonight. If you want to build something based on OpenSUSE, the first step would basically be to generate your keys that are going to be used to sign. So, again, varies by platform. You need to check the documentation. You need to prepare the binaries, possibly vendor firmware. You need to prepare kernel. You need to run FS, device 3, the trusted firmware A, U-boot, and possibly other bits. You need to sign. So, preparing binaries is by building them, and you also need to sign them. Sometimes sign happens during build time. For example, TFA handles the signing of many of the parts in the boot sequence. So you have basically one place that you put your keys and it's going to sign for you. And then you need to bundle everything. So to prepare TFA, there are a few required build dependencies. It depends on the platform. Definitely, if you're using U-boot, is going to require that. OPT, if you want to add extra security, extra layer of security. The signing keys, and in some cases, proprietary initialization firmware, and proprietary signing tools, because platforms. All right, so you could have TFA handle all the signing, but sometimes you could also have platforms that require external tools. And you often need to enable a few extra build arguments, that is trusted boot board equals one, and some platforms also generate COT, set chain of trust equals one. And TFA is basically going to handle signature, of BL1, BL2, BL31, BL32, and BL30. So each image is going to have a signature. This is a short example of what the build command for TFA would look like on the LX2160, a platform that I used before. So in this case, you need to define the platform that we're building against. We define that we want to build a trusted, we want to enable the trusted board boot. We also need to inform the Kodi signing tool, CST, the NXT CST, where it lives. It's a slash proprietary open source tool, but it's not baked into TFA, so you need to check out that package. It's open source, but it lives on the NXT side. We also need to define the boot mode that we are selecting for our target platform, because certain platforms support EMC, SD, or onboard flash, or different boot modes. So you also need to define that. For the LX2160, we also need an initialization firmware that is the RCW. This is required to build TFA. So this is to initialize CPU, RAM, and other things. And we also need to point where is our bootloader, that is Uboot. So bundling all together, you create a rootfs, you put your kernel, init run, DTBs, bootloader, user space applications, anything that you want to have deployed to that image, and you need to write the firmware or the firmware files that have been signed in certain platforms in certain offsets. So this varies by platform, but maybe you need to write Uboot in a specific position, maybe you need to write an NXT initialization firmware in a different position, so you need to check the documentation because it varies by platform. And maybe you're asking if we can do this in OBS, in the Open Build Service. The answer is yes. We can use Kiwi to basically build our image, and we can use the user-defined scripts that are available in Kiwi to perform operations in our image. So most ARM images that we ship for OpenSUSE already use one way or other script to usually edit where, because you need to, in many platforms, you need to write Uboot in a specific location. So it can vary by platform, so we have that script. So in theory, it offers a few user-defined scripts, but you can have the practice sync used to change the contents of your root tree, so you can copy files to different locations, and with edit boot install, you write these files to their respective offsets in the SD card or the AMC. The only thing to remember is that if you want to do everything in OBS, you need to store your private keys in OBS. So you wouldn't do that in a public instance. You can do potentially on a private instance behind your firewalls, or you can build certain binaries outside OBS, upload them just signed without the keys, and then you build your image. So that's also a way that you could use OBS. Maybe in the future we get a implementation of how to safely store keys in OBS, because currently you can hold some certificates, but it doesn't work for this kind of scenario. Some references if you want to dig into documentation. Good documentation on the ARM Trusted Firmware site. There is some documentation as well about UEFI on the OpenSUSE site, so you can know how OpenSUSE UEFI works. I also shared a few links to NXT, but the documentation is pretty extensive, but it's for NXT, but it gives a good idea how it works on a given platform. Possibly later, these slides are going to be uploaded somewhere, so these are links that you could copy and open in a browser. So that's it. Thank you. Any questions?
You showed the example of NXT and how it needs all this special sauce. I assume it's impossible to create an image that has all the sauces and can decide when you put it, what it has, depending on the system.
Impossible to create what?
So, you showed us the procedure for the NXT boards.
Yes.
For the TFA. If I had another board that had another procedure, I would there is no possibility that I could create one image for both that just decides somehow when I install them, where it runs correctly, what are the correct offsets, so on.
If you're using a UEFI-capable system, you can create one image that works for all devices. So the device supports UEFI. So that's what we do with our x86 UEFI or ARM UEFI. You take just the architecture and you boot on any machine, but it needs to support UEFI. If you're using ARM Trusted Firmware, TFA, you need to build the image for each platform. Maybe, but I'm not entirely sure if a vendor would have, let's say, a set of devices that, you can build the same thing for all. Because if you, at least on NXT, each board, each revision of the board has a different procedure. It can have a different procedure. So, in theory, if you're deploying multiple devices in a field, you may need to create multiple images.
Thank you.
Okay.
Question, Alex. So recently there have been products on the market, these new ARM laptops, right? The very recent chips by Qualcomm, Snapdragon, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. And I was thinking, that's very nice because those are very powerful machines and they're not MacBooks, so maybe you can install Linux on them. But then some people in some forums said, well, that's entirely up to the vendor because they could lock you down like a smartphone, and if you don't have access to the bootloader, it's game over. So I wanted to know, now that you have extensive experience with booting, UEFI, bootloaders and stuff like that, do you think that what's the brand that made the best Snapdragon, I don't remember, it's a laptop, it's one of those, whatever, latest laptop. They could choose to cut out Linux from that, or it's people are going to find a way. What's your take on that?
So, it depends on the vendor, I would say, because that's the intent of Secure Boot. You can lock the board and you can replace anything in that. So some Android devices like that use Snapdragon or other processors, you can replace the OS, but it's usually not easy to replace or impossible to replace so many. So I have no idea about the Snapdragon devices that are coming to market. These are, I believe, Lenovo has a few, and the Surface from Microsoft. So if they're capable of booting Windows, in theory, you could replace Windows with OpenSUSE because it's UEFI. But I don't know the platforms.
Windows machine, it's not Lenovo.
Yeah, so often if you can boot Windows on a machine, you can replace because it's not often blocked. So usually your BIOS or the firmware in the motherboard, you are allowed to change configurations. I'm not entirely sure what you can do on these platforms, if everything is locked or not.
Thanks.
Any more questions? Okay, thank you.